Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, a weekly web lab where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half-free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com, the Micro Effect Radio Network at themicroeffect.com, and the Liberty Radio Network at lrn.fm.
Welcome to the Vaporsmith's Freedom Hour with Freedom Fiends, Michael W. Dean.
Broadcasting from my windowless bunker.
And Nima Vedati.
Go, go, Freedom Fiends!
Rolling.
Nickety nickety New Year's Eve. Welcome, Happy New Year's on the 4th of January here, Nima.
Happy New Year, Michael. It's the 2012. Are you excited? This is it. This is the year, man.
Kind of. I told you I hate holidays and I hate the end of the year, and I'm always saying, will this infernal year ever be over? And it really wasn't over till yesterday. It was like people didn't get back to work. They didn't return my calls. You know, they didn't come out and fix the downed internet wire that was down for 4 days. My cable TV, internet, and phone wire coming into my house was down and like in the alley for 4 days. And for 4 days, Optimum said they'd come out today and fix it, and didn't until yesterday. It wasn't, I didn't interrupt my service, but fortunately, because people are respectful and there's not a lot of traffic in Wyoming.
especially in an alley.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I guess it's kind of no harm, no foul. I mean, I probably would have been pissed they didn't come fix it sooner, but at least you didn't lose your service.
I'm like, I'm sober. Get your drunk asses out here. Climb up on a pole drunk and fix my cable, bitches.
Well, a lot of people took Monday off, too, of work, you know, since New Year's Day fell on a Sunday. But I know. What are you going to do? What are you going to do?
But this infernal year is over, and this episode is called Happy New Year's, Slaves.
Slaves, yes.
Because New Year's Eve, Obama gave his subjects the glorious present of signing the indefinite detention bill.
I know, right? And I was glad to see a lot of even lefties were kind of like, wow, this sucks. I can't believe you're doing this.
Jon Stewart slayed him for it last night.
Did he? Good, yeah. Good.
Yeah. He brought back his Elmo-like puppet character, Gitmo. Remember Gitmo?
No, I don't remember Gitmo. Yeah. It's a puppet. Does Jon Stewart do the motion with the puppet? Nice, yeah. Nice. He's a talented man, multifaceted.
So how do you feel about that? How do you feel about that, Nima Vedati?
Oh, shit. How do you feel about it, Mike? I feel horrible. I mean, I guess, you know, they always sort of believe they could do all this stuff anyway. They believe, since I'm the president, I'm above the law. I have the power to do whatever the fuck I want, basically. Just the fact that they're codifying it now.
They're codifying it. That's the word I was going to go for.
Yeah, I know. Codifying. Yeah, whatever. But, I mean, like we say before, really, words on paper are just that, words on paper. It's all just a fiction, and they believed they could do this before. So I don't see a whole lot of effective change. It just seems like a symptom of that's how far gone the system is. The system is beyond saving.
I'm not afraid at all, man, for us. I mean, and I know a lot of people it's having a chilling effect on. They're like being careful what they say now on the internet, but it's like, it, man. We're peace-loving guys, and you know, I thought I'd be dead by 30. I'm 47. I've had a good life. If they want to make a martyr out of me, it's just going to spread freedom fiends further, man. So you should all be downloading every episode and saving them.
Well, they're not going to make a martyr out of us. That's the thing. They wouldn't want to do that. At least I don't think it's come to that point yet.
And, no, they'll go after Alex Jones or the head of, you know, like some representative from Occupy Wall Street.
I don't even think they'll do that because that shows their hand way too much. They're going to try to be much sneakier and much more subtle about it. For instance, you know, Obama waited till the holidays to announce this and to sign the bill. And, you know, that's when they sort of waited to really get the SOPA thing going. I mean, luckily they haven't signed it yet, but
yeah,
I think
we're
hoping,
talk about,
you know,
SOPA more,
this
but
kind of stuff just passes and people don't pay a lot of attention to it.
Well, here's my prediction for this indefinite detention thing is they'll wait a while, 6 months, a year, and then they'll try it on someone truly heinous, like some mad bomber who's trying to blow up kids, that everyone will go, oh, well, yeah, well, of course we need this. And then once that passes without a murmur, they'll go after someone who's just doing free speech, you know?
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. I think the gig is up. I think they're in their death throes. I'd like to bring us back to the analogy of T-1000 splashing around in the molten steel. I really think that's what they are. They're just showing their teeth right now, but they're in the pit. The state is on its way out, and I think all that has to happen is the baby boomer generation slowly passes on. The greatest generation
becomes the latest generation.
Exactly. That. Yeah, thanks for finishing my joke for me, Michael.
We finish each other's sandwiches.
Exactly.
Yeah, I actually reread that T2 thing. I was looking at the glossary yesterday because our new fan, Paul from Florida, is laid up with a bad cold on NyQuil, and he's been proofreading our entire website and sending me I love this. I have no problem with it. He's sending me like an email like every 10 minutes with a new typo he's found. So nice. I was correcting some typos on the glossary. And I reread the T2 thing splashing in the... I really like that. It's good. People should go look at our glossary. It's good if you don't know what it is.
Glossary is good for a laugh. It's also good to just come in our world, you know? That's sort of what Freedom Fiends is get a view of what's inside our warped minds. I guarantee you they're less warped than the folks in D.C. living in their own status bubble.
Speaking of coming into our world, I've been doing a lot of showing the man behind the curtain and how the magic tricks are done with a between episodes cast I did yesterday about SEO, search engine optimization. We have been becoming incredibly more popular and getting a lot more traffic on the website lately, partially because we're great and partially because we do something no one else really does, a way they don't do it. And partially because I've been doing a lot of tinkering under the hood of the website, and I'm doing a series on how to do that for freedom people.
Yes, and it's important to note that Michael has been really good at this so far. Freedom Fiends has dropped its Alexa ranking like a rock, and that's a good thing. The lower the ranking, the better. Obviously, you want to be at number one. For instance, Google
is at one.
Is at one.
We'll never be
one. We'll never surpass Google. Maybe in LibPair one day.
I think you'd have to have your own satellites to surpass. Right. You know, I actually saw this article about some anarchists in Europe that are trying to launch their own communication satellite to bypass SOPA if it passes, and any internet censorship.
Good, good. That is really good news.
It ain't going to happen. I mean, you know, it would be money would be one thing, but if you could actually do it, America or some other country would just blow it out of the sky because you didn't ask permission.
That's what I would worry about.
And they'd come arrest you for making bombs because you're building rockets, you know?
I don't necessarily worry that they can't do it. I think it can be done. There was a thing where a guy spent $200 and was able to shoot a camera into orbit and take pictures. It was near Earth orbit.
It was with a balloon, though. Wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. He tied it to a balloon, got it up that high. But it was high enough to get into near Earth orbit. I mean, that's all you'd need. A little bit higher, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, all you need is I didn't see the tech specs of how he did it, but I believe it's just an aluminized weather balloon filled with helium, and they will go into low Earth orbit.
Right. Yeah. It can be done. The only reason it's done right now with all this, you know, billions and millions of dollars wasted is because it's a government program, you know.
You know, that'd be an interesting pirate radio hack. Theoretically is
pirate satellites,
you know, putting like a 100-watt transmitter on a weather balloon and just letting it go up. I wonder how far it would spread before it got, you know, how far your signal would spread before it got out of range.
It's a good question. Maybe something that needs to be done.
It wouldn't be a good thing to do, though, because if it did reach down and cover a large area, you would be interfering with somebody's channel. When people do pirate radio, the ethical people always find an unused channel in their area, which is different everywhere.
Right, right. And speaking of alternative ways of communication, I was actually listening to a Bad Quaker podcast. He was sort of discussing how it was almost pessimistic. He thinks it's inevitable that the state will find a way to get rid of the internet. He kept talking of it in temporary terms. Like we are a few steps ahead of the state right now, but the state's main priority, one of their main priorities, is catching up to that, to stifle the communication. So he was sort of exploring ideas and thoughts about other things like you have and like we have. But I really think what we're seeing now with the SOPA thing, it might not pass A, so people are going to be very vocal about stuff. It's not going to fly by the night, I don't think. And B, like you said, people are coming up with ways and hacks around it already. And I think that that's what happens.
I want to give a shout out to the Bad Quaker. I checked his website today and he's had a death in the family and he's not going to be podcasting for a little while.
Oh, that's a shame.
My heart goes out to him. I understand. It's a cancer death, and I've had a few of those in my life.
Right, right. Yeah, that's horrible. Our thoughts are with you, Mr. Bad Quaker.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast. Freedom Fiends is now available for 24/7 streaming to your iPhone, Android phone, or other chromed robot turd. Click on the streaming audio link on freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
You know, as far as the people who write SOPA laws, I mean, we've said it before, it's like old people who will eventually die off, but they're trying to like plaster some more bricks into the wall before they do, and they don't understand the internet. I mean, they're like my dad, you know, technologically. Here's an example of my dad. I was talking to my dad last night on the phone. He's like, "What you doing?" And I'm like, "Oh, I'm watching the Republican caucus in Iowa on TV. You should be watching it too. Ron Paul's on there." Because I keep hipping my dad to Ron Paul.
Right,
you know, my dad's an old Nixon type Republican, but you know, he read Ron Paul's book, The Revolution. I gave it to him for his birthday a few years ago. He loved it.
Good.
I sent him End the Fed this year. He hasn't read it yet, but I think he'll like it. And I said, "Yeah, I'm watching this on TV, and I'm in Wyoming, and he's in New York State." And he said, "What channel is it on?" And that's like the kind of people that are writing the internet laws, you know? And
I said,
I lovingly said, "Well, I don't know. It's on different, you know, the channels are different for different networks, different places." And I said, "It's, you know, since his TV probably gets three channels," I said, "it's on NBC, ABC, and CBS."
Yeah,
so
yeah. Every channel.
Turn on your TV, man.
Right.
I watched that last night, some of it. Did you watch it?
No. Again, I don't have an open signal to my TV. Anything that comes out of my TV screen is either internet or PlayStation.
Ron Paul came in third with 22%, and Romney, I think, and Santorum tied at 24-25% each.
Right. Of course, I did read the results, and that was apparently the popular vote results. They actually came away with the same number of delegates, six for each. So, yes, it was 6-6.
Is that something that wasn't determined till today?
Or? I suppose, yeah. It was dated this morning.
Because last night, all the mainstream media was saying, it's a two-man race from here on out, and barely mentioning Ron Paul.
Of course, because that's what they want to say. That's their narrative. Just like before it happened, their narrative was that Santorum was surging and Ron Paul was dropping because of his stance on the war.
Santorum is surging. That sounds dirty, especially
if you
Google, if you know the true definition. You know, what I think is Santorum is unelectable, and I think he's going to get knocked out by the gays re-upping their internet campaign. You know about that, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think everybody knows about that.
I mean,
it's
if you search
gross.
Santorum, the first
Google
thing that
it.
Comes up
Just
is
Google
something
it.
Filthy. Yeah.
Which is hilarious, and I mean, I don't know how anybody in their right mind could think Santorum should be at the helm of anything, not even a car, let alone a country.
Yeah. I watched Ron Paul's speech, not concession speech, not acceptance speech, just his speech after. It was really the worst speech I've ever seen Ron Paul give. He was really tired. He made a joke that wasn't funny. He made a mistake. He was sounding really, really Republican, too. Like, I guess that's what he has to do as a politician now, to, you know, he's quoting great Republicans and talking about the Republican Party and how great it is. But
yeah.
I was like, where is my Ron Paul and what have they done with him?
Yeah, it was a bummer. But I was kind of taken aback a little bit. I kind of expected him. I'm an eternal optimist, so I kind of expected him to pull off a win. I know it was a tie for first, technically, if you count the delegates. But, you know, I was kind of hoping for a landslide or something. But then I stopped myself and I said, you know, this is why. This is why we're anarchists, because we shouldn't have to depend on what some people in Iowa think would be the best direction for our lives. That's silly. It's silly to think that my life is dependent on who wins in a horse race election.
I think Ron Paul insulted Iowa, too. I've searched for this online, and I think just it happened, but no Ron Paul fans want to point it out, and all the haters of him just weren't busy watching him. Mm-hmm. He said, "I want to thank the great people of Ohio." I swear he said that. DJ and I both looked at each other, and, you know, the only person I've ever seen do that before was in the 80s at the 930 Club in Washington, D.C., the singer in the Circle Jerks, who was drunk off his ass, said, "It's really great to be here in Baltimore," which, you know, he was drunk and Baltimore's 45 minutes away. It's kind of
Yeah.
Ron Paul's was a bigger gaffe. And he said, introduce his wife, who was wearing a fur, which, you know, is cool. I never, no Democrat would ever do that now. It's, she's got balls. And he said, I'm sure you've all met my wife and said her name. I can't remember her name. I'm sure you've seen her on the cover of the cookbooks. And I'm like, is that a Paula Deen joke? Because no, she looks a lot like Paula
Deen.
No,
they have a family cookbook.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought it was a Paula Deen joke,
he wasn't
man.
Calling his wife
it
Paula
seemed
Deen.
Really random.
No, no, it came. Okay. I guess they came out with it about a month ago, and apparently they had put it on all the seats in the convention center where they were having the rally.
That's sweet.
So it was a shout out to that. Yeah, yeah. Some bloggers kind of took them to task, saying, "Oh, well, Ron Paul's so old, he's having all these old unhealthy recipes. You know, this just shows how out of date he is."
Oh, I like comfort food, man.
Yeah,
there's a good the Freedom Fiends Fun Forum, which there's a link on our site, has a section on recipes now, and our very own Paula Deen, Mama Liberty, is contributing some healthy and natural snack suggestions
good.
On there.
Yeah, maybe I'll throw something up there too. I fancy myself a cook every now and then. My wife does as well. So yeah, we'll throw something up there too.
My wife has one thing that we shared on there, which is Mrs. Deen's ginger toffee cookies, which we used to call Mrs. Deen's white trash ginger toffee cookies. But we stopped doing that because so many people have asked for the recipe, like people she works with and, you know, clients, that we didn't want to be controversial. So we took that line out.
Right.
But they're really good. I actually gave the recipe to Karmaceuticals and they said they're going to add some seasonings to them and make their own version.
By seasoning, I guess you mean their special blend of herbs.
Well, yeah, medical marijuana. That's what they deal in.
Nice, nice. Are they going to give a shout out with the name to you guys?
I don't know. I hope so.
The Deen's Guns and Weed cookies or something?
I'll never taste one or get to taste one.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFiends.com.
So 40,000 new laws passed on New Year's. Oh, wait. Before that, Obama did something else unprecedented and fucked up today. Like right after this New Year's thing. He did an unprecedented illegal recess confirmation. It's previously been said that recess confirmations are only acceptable when there's a recess of three or more days. And the Senate is not out. And he got sick of waiting. And it's some recess for some guy that controls all our money somehow. And the Senate was blocking it. And he just went ahead and appointed him today.
Wow. To what? Do you know?
I don't know, man. It's just, you know, another, like, guy who controls all your money. But, I mean, that guy does tyranny so quick. I was looking at the glossary, and I had to update it yesterday of, like, you know, under Obama Humper, it listed, like, the things that Obama's done that were like Lincoln. And I had to add a thing of, and he's done things that are worse than Lincoln, and update them. That guy is such a moving target of tyranny. I can't keep up. At least Bush was, like, slow and plodding with his tyranny. You could keep up, you know?
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Obama is definitely a point guard on the basketball court of tyranny. He gets him out quick. And the other thing about it is the mainstream media doesn't really pay attention to it at all. At least when Bush was president, you know, you'd have a few intrepid reporters coming and pointing out the ridiculousness of some of this stuff.
Where are those people now, man?
They're on the internet. They all got fired from their jobs for not being bootlicking enough.
I've been on Reddit.com a lot. Reddit is great. It's a really popular site. It's almost all text, and it's got some really useful stuff on there. A lot of this SOPA activism organizing is going on there. And then there's a really cool part of it that I like that's called Explain It to Me Like I'm Five.
Oh.
And you can ask any question and experts will come on and answer it. And there's a rule on there that you can't be like confrontational or have an agenda. Like if someone says like, why do people say Ron Paul isn't electable? Or why is Obama considered tyrannical? People go on, and even when they have a strong opinion, they're not allowed to put it in. They just put the facts of why people think that. It's really good.
Okay, yeah, that sounds awesome.
And you explain, and they explain it like you could explain to a five-year-old.
Right, right. Which is the way it should be. I mean, things are more simple than people give them credit for. People are always trying to overthink things and say, you know, we need these experts to tell us what's what. But I mean, the world can really be broken down much more simpler than that. If something feels wrong, looks wrong, it's probably wrong. You don't need people who studied and got PhDs to tell you what's socially acceptable and what's not.
Yeah. Speaking of what's socially acceptable, though, and people go, yeah, this is fine. I watched a little bit of the ball drop on New Year's Eve. It was like New York City Times Square, a billion people or whatever, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. And Fox News like went over and pointed at this scene. And they were like, in this scene, they were like, it was before, you know, while it was still light out, they were like, people standing there, and it looked like there were 200 people, and it looked like in these 200 people there were like 40 cops in uniform, and they said, and our brave and professional officers of the law will be here keeping things on hand, and they're just blending in so well you don't even notice them. And I'm looking at it, and I'm going, all I see is cops, man. And that's not even counting the undercovers and the snipers on the roof. And you know, nothing makes me feel like partying and dancing than some sniper looking at me through the scope of a government 308.
Oh God, yeah, I can't even imagine. That is the dystopia that people had envisioned, you know.
Dance, slaves!
I wonder if the snipers are like bouncing along with the music.
I know. So we have a new little thing on the podcast. I made the subscription button bigger and redder and shiny. It looks like a red pill now. So when you take the red pill, you subscribe. And when you subscribe, you're taking the red pill.
Nice. That's pretty dope.
Yep. So 40,000 new laws, state and federal, went into effect January 1st. I feel safer. How about you?
I feel disgusted. Is that the most ever? Like, do we break something here or is that about average?
I don't know, but there was a bunch of articles about it. Every New Year's they have that. You know, it was like some crazy shit. Like, NyQuil now requires a prescription in California.
What? So kids don't trip on DXM?
Yeah. Mm. That asthma inhaler that I've been stockpiling because it's the only one that works for me.
Primatene mist, over-the-counter one. Yes.
That is illegal now.
Wow.
Or can't be sold now. And that's an environmental thing, not a drug thing.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. When people say, you know, America's the freest country, or, you know, everybody's fighting for our freedoms and we must remain free, I don't think any society with 40,000 laws ever could be considered a free society, let alone 40,000 laws in 1 year. Added to the – there's got to be more than a million laws on the books here in the States.
And there's a new ban, bans happy hour in Utah. There's one in California. If you're a fire breather, like a circus performer, you have to be licensed with the fire marshal.
Really? So the fire marshal is going to have auditions where you come up and do fire tricks?
I don't know, man. Dance, slaves! Right. And there was one article about all these new laws. There were a bunch of them, but one of them said, new laws target abortion, immigration, alcohol, and animals. And I was thinking, there should be a Bureau of Abortion, Immigration, Alcohol, and Animals. They could call it BAAA.
Yeah, yeah.
BAIAA. Or it'd be like BAAA.
Right, right, right.
BAAA.
Yeah, yeah. The sheep is getting artificially inseminated. BAAA. Get your hand out of there.
You ever see that King of the Hill where Hank takes Bobby out to the pig farm where his dad took him to show where babies come from? You know, he showed the pigs mating. His dad showed him the pigs mating as a kid. And Hank takes Bobby out there. And there's like this really kind of sexy woman in a lab coat artificially inseminating the pig. And he's like, we're going to see where babies come from. And it's this tall blonde woman, you know, woman with scientist with glasses, like sticking this thing in the pig, and the pig's going, "Arr!" And that's where babies come from, Bobby.
Yes, babies come from a pretty girl in a lab coat sticking her hand up in the naughty part.
Of a pig.
Oh. No, I didn't see that episode, yeah. But it sounds like a quality one.
I was thinking of calling this episode, Everything Was an Inside Job.
In a way, I guess it is. I mean, I guess it depends on your definition of an inside job, but...
It is in that, you know, the government... Without the government, life would be perfect. I think it would, man, in a way.
I think it would, too. And it brings up a good point that the government's hands are literally in everything. So pretty much when anything happens, you can point to the state and say, well, you know, this action led to this. And sometimes there's not the well-defined causality that we see there. You know, it's the unseen that Bastiat said we have to look for. So sometimes the losses that come from state action, we don't notice, but they're there. And if you look hard enough, you realize the state's behind pretty much everything that makes life horrible.
I have some really good news that it has nothing to do with the government. My sister, the day before Christmas, got a clean bill of health after her chemo. She's had cancer and she's now cancer-free.
Awesome. Congratulations, man. I know. Yeah, that's good news.
I know. I sent her this video she really loved. It's this song by that band Porno for Pyros called Pete's Dad. Mm-hmm. And it's about the band having Christmas at Pete's house and Pete's dad finding out on Christmas Day that he's cancer-free.
Oh, cool, cool.
It's a beautiful song.
Good. And you're not real close with your sister, though, right?
I'm not unclose with her. I don't dislike her. She's the closest member of my family.
Okay.
Of all of them.
Cool, man. Yeah. Cool.
I do. We just don't talk very often. I mean, really, it's not like I hate those people. It's more like I don't really know those people. I mean, my mother was 40 when she had me, and my brother was in college, and my sisters were in high school.
Oh, wow.
You know, it was like I lived with them for like 3 or 4 or 5 years tops when I was, you know, under 5, and then they all moved out of the house, and then I only ever saw them
Christmas and Thanksgiving.
And then, you know, for the past 20 years, not even that, just call them on Christmas or call them once, a couple times a year.
Right, right.
You know, they're good people. I just don't really know them very well, but, you know, she's the one that I'm closest to.
All right. Well, you want to wrap it up and take a little break here?
Yeah.
All right.
And now, some corporate whoring for one of our favorite products.
Hi, I'm Nima Vedati from the Freedom Fiends podcast, and I'm excited about Vaporsmith's electronic cigarettes. I dig the taste, and I dig the freedom to vape anywhere the nanny staters would wet their pants if I smoked.
Howdy, I'm Michael Dean of the Freedom Fiends, and I love Vaporsmith's. I smoked 3 packs of tobacco cigarettes a day for decades, but now I'm only using Vaporsmith's. I love the flavors, I don't smell like smoke, and I save money, so I have more to spend on ammo and treats for my kiddies.
Vaporsmith's e-cigs revolutionize nicotine ingestion by bringing it into the 21st century. With Vaporsmith's, you'll enjoy all the invigorating nicotine with none of the nasty smoke. The Vaporsmith's are clean, efficient, and tasty. Available in 4 strengths and 10 delicious flavors. Reds, Classics, Turkish, Menthol, Strawberry, Cherry, Vanilla, Coffee, Minty Mint, and Cloves. Go to Vaporsmiths.com. Use coupon code FREEDOMFIEND to get 25% off your order. This is a limited time offer. Vaporsmiths.com is run by a liberty-loving entrepreneur, not some subsidized tax-eater conglomerate. Vaporsmiths at Vaporsmiths.com. Vaporsmiths. I'm enjoying one right now. Freedom Fiends, anti-war, pro-gun. New show on the Micro Effect Radio Network, Saturdays from 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Freedom Fiends, Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati's fun and feisty weekly chat about constitutional, libertarian, minarchist, and anarchist issues, abuse of authority by police, the war on drugs, the war on guns, self-defense, states' rights, natural rights, Austrian economics, DIY art, low-budget filmmaking, digital recording, activism, rock and roll, and more. Freedom Fiends. Saturdays from 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Learn more about The Micro Effect at themicroeffect.com.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
6 drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies! Jesus. On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
What's up, Nima?
Rolling. Hey, Michael.
During the break, I went out and there were 3 packages for DJ. She did a lot of ordering of things over Christmas, clothes, new stuff, and the usual Wednesday's Commie Sarah Tribune that I never ordered and don't want in my mailbox.
Anything interesting on it today?
University of Wyoming professor and student find something exciting, a new parasite.
A new parasite.
Like, hey, tax right. dollars at work. There's a, it's a, I've often called Freedom Fiends a nematode of liberty that grows in your brain. What's a nematode, Nima?
It's a kind of worm, isn't it?
Yeah.
It swims around, very microscopic.
Yeah.
Also my namesake.
We're a nematode of liberty that grows in your brain.
Grows in your brain, but we're not a parasite. We're healthy. It's a symbiotic relationship.
Did you get teased about your name in high school?
Did I get teased about my name?
Grade school?
Yes. In grade school, the worst it got was people saying it was a girl's name because it ended in an A. I actually went by James, which is my middle name, for a couple of years, and then switched back to Nima because I was like, you know, I got to be me. But in high school, no, nobody ever made fun of my name. In the locker room, a couple times I got called Bin Laden after 9/11. That was about the extent of that.
I have a really normal kind of yacht club waspy name, and not many people made fun of it, except my shop teacher in like sixth grade. Called me Maggot Spleen.
Called you what?
Maggot Spleen.
Maggot Spleen. Wow, that's pretty
He was
horrible.
Evil, man. I was like, I'm an artist. I don't want to work with my hands like this. I have thoughts and visions. And like, you know, he was like, come on, Nancy boy, make that birdhouse right. And he was so bad with me that I remember my older sister, the one that I was just saying, she's the closest. This is part of the reason she's closest, is she did things like this. She went and like yelled at him and talked to the principal about him bullying me.
Wow, that's really strange. I had a shop teacher in middle school that was just horrible as well. Coach Flannel. He was a skinny black guy with, he had bald head, and then the rest of it was like permed. And he was such an ass to me. I had like longer hair, and so he always made fun of me and called me a girl. And he said, I could just, he was always go off on these anti-gay rants because he was claimed to be a Christian. And so he'd go, ah, man, it'd be so horrible. I just, what if men could have babies? I could see Ovidati there walking through the hall with a big bump.
Oh my God. Like, what is it about shop teachers, man? I mean, I've heard of other instances too. I mean, I think they're all like failed machinists too. And a lot of them seem like they're drunks. That's, you know, generalizing. But in my experience, I actually, someone in my hometown told me that shop teacher is still alive and he's like really old and sick. And I thought about like flying back to my town and asking his family, yeah, he was always one of my favorites. Can I go visit him? And they just like whispering in his ear about how he's going to, you know, burn in so hell and how I'm going to eat his children.
Wow. Yeah, we don't need to have that kind of hate in our hearts, though.
Well, it crossed my mind as a joke, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You can think about it. See, that's there's a big difference between thought and action. People don't really realize that enough, and they should. My guy actually got his comeuppance. He was fired the year after I left for punching a student.
For being a homo?
He was always really violent, too. I don't know, maybe for being a homo. I don't know. He actually whipped me in class once. He whipped a few people.
Oh,
it was his thing. He'd pull out a belt, and he'd give you slaps on your wrist. What was it? Oh, I told some joke about, what do you call a lesbian dinosaur, a lickalotopus. He got so pissed at it, and he said, there's girls in here, and he like made me get up in front of the class, and he whipped me. It was awful.
You know, difference between thought and action, the gun ban in city meetings here passed.
Ah, right, right. Well, it already passed like the first reading.
Yeah, but it's passed.
This
it's,
silly procedural thing where they pass something three times before it's actually technically law.
But yep.
If it passes once, they're going to pass it again. It just becomes a procedural thing where they're like, does it pass? And they're like, yes.
But there's a picture in the paper of Vice Mayor Kanye Schlager.
Kanine.
I am always going to call her Kanye because it would piss her off.
Kanye is actually a good guy.
I don't care. It would piss her off for being a rapper. She's there's this picture of her in this like purple sweater vest and a white shirt looking like some 1890s school teacher. You know, really prim and proper.
Yeah, that's what she
looks like. It's a picture of her like looking askance at our friend Anthony Bouchard from the Wyoming Gun Owners Association as he's speaking. I mean, it's her just like literally like looking out the side of her eyes at him with her head tilted. And it's her misquoting him. It's Anthony said, I'm a pretty reasonable person, but some of my members aren't, which I think is funny as hell. But she misquoted him and said, well, you've said that some of your members are unbalanced. And there's a big difference between unbalanced and unreasonable. You know, unreasonable means you might yell at somebody. Unbalanced means you might do something. And she's trying to make it into something.
Yeah. If you believe in the right to self-defense, you obviously have some reasoning facility in your mind because you've come to the right conclusion about at least one thing.
Yeah. Bouchard said, what I said was I'm a pretty reasonable person, but some of my members aren't. I find it offensive that you take the words I said and twist it into something else. And Paul Meyer on the city council interjected, you say I can't be responsible for some of my members. That can be construed as a threat, Mr. Bouchard. That's what I hear.
It could be construed as a threat. I mean, I kind of took it as a veiled threat, so I think he has a point. Pete Myers does with that.
Yeah, but she twisted it even further.
Yeah, she twisted it into more of a direct threat. Like, hey, these people are crazy. Don't f*** with them.
I wish the NRA would go to Congress and say, you know, we're reasonable. Some of our members aren't.
They don't have the balls to do that. I mean, we've talked on this cast before.
They're square.
The NRA is square. They don't take a principled enough stand. They don't draw that thing in the line. They think that concealed carry laws are acceptable, but I don't think anything less than complete freedom, even the Constitution says it should be uninfringed, you know. Congress shall pass no law infringing. That means any law that does anything to prevent or make harder the right or access to guns is unconstitutional. So they don't even take a principled enough stand to meet the Constitution. And obviously, the Constitution doesn't even take a strong enough stand. So
you're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast. Freedom Fiends is now available for 24/7 streaming to your iPhone, Android phone, or other chromed robot turd. Click on the streaming audio link on freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFiends.com.
Did you see this headline, Oklahoma woman shoots, kills intruder, 9/11 operators say it's okay to shoot?
Yeah, I saw the headline. I didn't get to watch the video or read the story. You want to lay it out?
Yeah, well, it was really a horrible situation for the woman. She's 18. Mm-hmm. She has a baby. Her husband died of cancer on Christmas.
Oh.
On New Year's, two guys came to her house and said, we're friends of your husband. We want to come in and give our condolences. And she's like, I don't know you. I don't think your friend's my husband. Get off my property. And they tried to break in, and she had a gun, and she got on 911. And they spent like 15 minutes trying to break in, and the whole time she's telling the 911 operator about it. I've got a shotgun and a pistol in my hand, and if they come in, I'm going to shoot. And the 911 operator did not say it's okay to shoot. They never do. They went further than I've ever seen them, which was the operator said, I can't tell you what to do, ma'am, but you got to protect your baby.
Yeah.
And I feel sad for this woman. I mean, she's 18. Her husband dies on Christmas. And then on New Year's, some guys try to take advantage of her and rob her, or worse, using her husband's name. And they mm-hmm. probably didn't know him. What I really hate is what the article did with this. Like, they... God bless them for not saying she's a criminal and should be put away, but they tried to make her into this vigilante hero, and the cops called it a clean shoot, which is good too.
That's got to be a horrible thing.
And affect her kid. I mean, babies remember things even if they don't remember them, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they know a loud noise and a lot of cops in their house. But I really hate what the news media did with this. First of all, they had her pose with the phone and the shotgun, which I'd never f***ing do. I mean, that's, you know, but I'm not 18 and I read a lot of books. So, you know, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't even talk to the press. She gave a big interview to the press, and then the press twisted it around. They called her a pistol packing mama, which is not what she is. And they said something about it made her day, like make my day, like a reference to the Dirty Harry thing.
Oh, they did? Oh,
it
that's
didn't
just...
make her f***ing day.
No. That's not only bad journalism, that's just, that's offensive.
I know.
And that's the problem with the press a lot of times, is things are more about narrative than truth. They're more about stuff that's grabbing, and I've experienced it firsthand. You know, your news director says you got to write things more compelling. It doesn't matter about what's true or not and hedging your truth. What matters is getting clicks, pulling readers in.
Speaking of getting clicks, we spent $120 on Google advertising this week. We did get a lot of traffic for it, but I don't know if we got any new fans from it. If anyone is a fan because you saw a text ad on Google or some other website that Google deals with, drop us an email at talkback@freedomfiends.com.
Oh, yeah. We'd love to hear it. We'd love to hear who's listening now. And, you know, we are growing, so it is important to see why we're growing, how we're growing, who likes us, who doesn't.
I kind of have a feeling we did not get a lot of new fans because of it. And if we did get one or two, it's worth it. But it kind of reminds me of, I remember seeing this, you know, the band Primus?
Yeah, yeah, I love Primus.
Bomb opened for them once. It was the biggest show we ever played. It was 1,500 people. And cool. Now they play to a lot more than that. And they do the theme song for South Park and Robot Chicken. But they were playing in a warehouse to like 200 people like in the 80s. And I was there. And I remember Les Claypool, the singer, saying over the mic, "Who's here because of our mailing list?" And this was a mailing list that was like postcards through the mail. You know,
back in the day, right?
Yeah. And yep. One guy raised his hand and he said, "Congratulations, sir, you're worth $85 to us." But you are. If we spend $120 to get a new fan, it's worth it. Once. We'll do it once. We're not going to keep doing that.
It's good to try, especially you're on your new SEO kick. So you're researching through trial and error what works and what doesn't.
Which is not to say Google Ads don't work. They work, I believe, but for different businesses, you know, where you're selling a product that people wouldn't find otherwise. Because you can tailor them to like regions, keywords. You know, if you're selling like air compressors in Albany, New York, you know, they'll only show up with people searching in Albany, New York, who are searching air compressor. So
I would posit that maybe, you know, especially younger audiences probably filter all that stuff out. I don't mean technologically, I mean mentally.
Yeah.
I know I never even look at the Google ads because I know they're ads and they're colored a little bit differently. So I search for what I want and I look in the search results and that's about it when I use Google. But I bet there's a lot of old people out there that don't understand. You know, I deal with it in my job because I deal with tech support and I deal with people who don't really understand the difference between a search bar and an address bar, and so they might think that an ad is actually a search result kind of thing. Yeah. So,
well, I don't think I've ever bought anything from a search result ad over on the side. I've never bought anything off of a Facebook ad. Facebook yep. actually has a long way to go with getting it right. Like recently, I was chatting with my stepson. He sent me this. There was this video of Dead Kennedys covering the Beatles song Back in the USSR, and it was just horrible. And it was like, they didn't even change the words. It just sounded like a bar band doing a bad Beatles cover, mm-hmm. Like too fast and hard. And he and I were chatting about it, and all of a sudden over on the right-hand side, I started getting ads for meet beautiful Russian women and marry them. And I'm like, and it's like, doesn't Facebook know I'm married? Facebook knows I'm married. Maybe yeah, they think, yeah. you know, maybe they'll give them to everybody and think people want to leave their wives or something. I don't know.
Find Facebook. I have clicked on a few Facebook ads. I find their ads more effective on me, at least. There's always like music stuff, like tailored. And you know, I don't know. Maybe they look at my profile and see that I've DJed before or what I'm interested in. And so they'll add me stuff like, you know, get free songs if you're a professional DJ, you know, for free, get all the latest hits or check out this new software. And so I'll look at it for like technical stuff like that all the time.
Yeah, I love the free market, but the internet portion of it in some ways has a long way to go.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean,
without being creepy, if it gets better, it's going to be creepy too. I don't like that Gmail reads your email and then gives you ads.
Yeah, that is a bit creepy. And I did feel creeped out when I first saw that. But I don't know, not too much. I mean, the internet is still so young. That's one thing we don't really remember or realize often is really how new it is and what the promise in the future holds. You know, it doesn't stop here. It's kind of crazy to think of how fast society and technology advances. I mean, the people who are old now, they don't understand the internet that well because it just sort of blew up so fast. It almost went behind them.
Like I said, my dad asked me 2,000 miles away which channel something's on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So who knows what it ends up being? And I think it stays a step ahead of the state. That's my prediction.
I had a very positive experience with the non-internet free market this weekend. We went and there was a year-end mattress sale at Mattress. I've never had a new mattress in my life until now.
Always like hand-me-downs and stuff?
Always like when I was a kid, it was my siblings' mattresses. When I was at church farm school, it was some mattress that, you know, 50 other boys had slept on over the years. And flip it over, get rid of the stains. Then like when I was on my own, I mean, I literally like found mattresses on the street. I remember like putting them on the roof of my car and driving them 20 miles and having to pick them up when they fell off on the highway. And, you know, buying them for $25 at a yard sale. Sale and having my roommates help me carry them 4 blocks. And I bought a new mattress. I don't want to say what I spent, but new mattress and new pillows. It's like heaven laying on this thing. It's going to extend my lifespan. My back pain is completely gone in 3 days, you know?
We should do ads for them.
I think we just did. I'll send him a bill. The guys that came over and delivered it, it was kind of funny. Everybody that delivered everything in California was Mexican. Everybody that delivers everything or comes to your house for plumbing or electricity or anything like that, except for the guys from the state who were all old and weird and redneck. Uh-huh. Everybody that comes to my house to do any work, it's always the same thing. It's two white guys. One's about 35. One's about 20. The 35, and they're kind of hip, but kind of redneck, you know?
Uh-huh.
I mean, they look like if you smoked weed, you could say, hey, where can I get weed? Right. I don't smoke weed.
Or so blaze up in the back of the house kind of thing.
They all look like they're ready to go deer hunting, but they're going to listen to like punk rock on the way there.
Uh-huh.
And it's always like the 35-year-old guy really knows what he's doing and is really confident and mellow and cool. And the 20-year-old is always like scared and unsure.
Right. He's the new guy. It's probably his first job like that.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the, you know, I think that the apprenticeship system is alive and well here too as part of it.
Yeah.
Which is cool. But when they were delivering the mattress, I went out of the room to go get a pen to sign the receipt form. And I came back in and the older guy was staring at the Freedom Fiends calendar you made me that has the picture of the guy putting the SD chip in the harness on the pigeon. And
the carrier pigeon.
And it says drone proof since 2011.
Yeah.
And he was just like, he didn't say anything, but he was just fucking staring at it like, what the hell is this? It's pretty.
Yeah, it is. Well, we use drone as a verb so often. I haven't really heard other people use it as much as us, but I kind of feel like it's just common. You know, everybody's always talking about getting droned and who got droned. But I guess in the real world, people don't really think about it that much. You know, it just sort of flies over their head, no pun intended.
Well, we came up with the term don't drone me, bro. And that's don't a running joke on the podcast. And that's actually a search term that leads a lot of people to our website.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
People are actually searching for don't drone me, bro.
Yep.
Well, maybe I stand corrected. Maybe more people out there are using the word drone.
Yep. You know, at that Ron Paul speech the other day, Rand Paul was standing behind him and looked like a deer caught in the headlights of a car the whole time, or had like a 1,000-yard stare.
Rand Paul did?
Yeah.
Hmm.
It was weird.
I wonder why.
You know what a 1,000-yard stare is, right?
No.
Well, the original term comes from snipers that are like constantly shooting people at a distance, just get this kind of glazed, like humanless look on their face.
Hmm.
But it's a term for that stare. When someone's just exhausted or defeated or freaked out, they have this like emotionless look and they're looking like further than anything in front of them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, dude, I mean, electoral politics, I can't blame anybody for feeling that way after something as crazy as an Iowa caucus. It's a good time to point out how much wasted energy goes into all of this.
To try to like pick the guy to tyrannize you and enforce your tyranny, you know, your pet tyranny.
Right.
And it ends up a lot of times, you know, with single issues determining votes. You know, mm-hmm. it's like the gun people only want to vote for the gun guy, no matter how tyrannically is with everything else. The weed people only want to vote for the weed people. The gay people only want to vote for the gay people. And Obama got elected, I think, largely on the weed people and the gay people, and then just screwed them all, no pun intended. But I guess the gay people think that he's an okay guy now because he ended Don't Ask, Don't Tell. But that's just repealing another bad law by another Democrat. I mean, that doesn't really add any freedom to the world.
No, the freedom to go and be a part of the military-industrial complex? I mean, what kind of freedom is that? I don't think it's any freedom at all, really. And the other thing is, I think you're giving the electorate maybe too much credit here, because I think a lot of people don't even go that far to even research the issues. It's just a general sense of what the media says. You know, they're so zoned out.
I mean, the Republicans seem like they're voting on who has the best tie and jawline at this point.
I don't know what they're voting on. But
I mean, really, they're loving Romney and Santorum, and they're like, they're actually voting on who sounds the most normal. They're not voting for Ron Paul because he sounds crazy and unusual with these new freedom ideas and new. They're not voting for Rick Perry because he sounds like he's drunk, and they're not voting for Newt Gingrich because he sounds really angry, like your angry grandfather that's going to belt whip you. And they're not voting for Michelle Bachmann because she just seems kind of crazy. They're voting for like the most, I don't even know the word, man, square?
the person who just gives them that warm, fuzzy feeling.
Yeah.
Or the person whom their pastor or the Fox News commentator or Rush Limbaugh tells them to vote for.
Yep.
And this is the person that's going to have the power to indefinitely throw you in a cage, to bomb you with a drone, to do that to your little sister, to impose all sorts of tyranny on you. It's like that voter in Portugal recently says, you know, we get to choose the sauce that we're cooked in, but we don't get to choose if we get to be cooked or not.
A lot of Democrats are waking up, and there's an interesting movement called the...
The Blue Republican Movement.
You're going to be interviewing that guy next week, the founder of it, for your first NEMA solo joint. I've been doing some Michael solo joint podcasts, and you're going to... You know, people have been asking us to do interviews, and like, I don't really like to do them, but we're going to do a test, and if this goes well, you may start interviewing people outside the cast as Freedom Fiends auxiliary solo joints and putting them up on days other than when we put the podcast up.
Yeah, I think it'll be a good idea. I mean, I used to interview people professionally when I worked for the two TV news stations I worked for. So, of course, then I was most of the time, 99% of the time, interviewing people that I think are silly and had silly ideas, and I couldn't really show my hand that, hey, this is statist and stupid. But I'm going to be interviewing somebody who is at least a critical thinker. He writes for HuffPo, but he's been writing a series of articles saying that, hey, you know, Obama is really bad on war, and he's really bad on civil liberties. I don't necessarily agree with Ron Paul as sort of his angle, but if he gets to be the Republican nominee, Obama's going to at least have to change his tune on some of these things. They'll be what's discussed in the debates. You know, they'll discuss why are we bombing Afghanistan and why are we having the power to detain Americans indefinitely. Whereas if Perry or Santorum or Gingrich or Romney are going up against Obama, it's all going to be the normal claptrap that's really of no substance.
Now, is Robin's take just voting in the primary for Ron Paul to try to change Obama's promises, which he doesn't keep, as we've seen, or is it to actually vote for Ron Paul in the general election too?
I'm not sure how far he takes it, and it's been an ongoing series, so I don't know where he stands right now on it, and that's what I'll be asking him.
That's my first question for him.
And that's what we'll be finding out, hopefully. I know people like Glenn Greenwald have come up and written great articles about how, hey, look, if you're on the left and you really do consider a war to be a big issue and you really do consider civil liberties to be an issue, you need to be honest with yourself and realize that Paul is so much better than Obama or really anybody that's been a mainstream candidate for the past few decades. Glenn Greenwald stops short and he says, as a disclaimer, I don't endorse Paul. I don't endorse Obama. I'm writing this as sort of an observer. That might be the angle Robin Corner is coming from. Maybe not. We'll find that out, though. I'll find that out.
Cool.
Freedom Fiends got your blood boiling? Tell them what's on your mind. Contact them at talkback@freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends!
So did you hear that an Occupy Wall Street guy stabbed a cop on New Year's?
Yeah, I think you were telling me that. What were the circumstances? Was it in self-defense?
Maybe. Cop was trying to arrest him. Stabbed him in the hand. Cop's fine.
Did they shoot the guy? I mean, seems like that's the kind of case where the cop's usually dispatched with the guy and he ends up dead and the cop takes a paid vacation.
No, I think they cuffed him and threw him in a cage, threw him in some dark windowless room where no one can hear him scream.
They stomped him in the nuts and called him a terrorist.
That's a Boondocks reference.
Yes, please watch the Boondocks. I've been watching season 3 with my wife because it's such a great show.
I did a blog post on one of my other sites, michaelwdean.com, about how I think I found this 70s piece of music that is the inspiration for part of the melody line in Boondocks.
Yes, in the theme song, which is a great theme song. That's my wife's favorite rap song is probably the theme song for Boondocks.
It's a great song. And it references the Four Boxes of Liberty.
Yep, the ballot in your box, the bullet in your gun.
Yep.
Yeah.
So are you doing something with that melody from the 70s thing? Or are you looping that and doing something with it?
I wouldn't call it a loop. I did slice up the sample, played it in a few different ways. So I'm going to use it as a melody for some kind of rap. I don't know what it's going to be about yet.
I'm opening a pack of cigarettes.
Waiting on your Vaporsmith shipments.
Yeah, I feel bad. Steve had a baby over Christmas, so he was closed for a few days. But it was also just I've been vaping quicker than I should be. Actually, they're coming out with new cartomizers that not only have a new look, and they have new flavors for them, too.
Yeah.
A couple extra flavors, the, what is it, minty mint and coffee. But they also, all of the vaporizers now are longer lasting, and they also have cartomizers.
The cartomizers.
And the cartomizers, also, they have them available in a even higher nicotine one, which I'm going to get because I like.
You're a nicotine fiend, and that is no lie. It's weird because when I first met you and we first started working together, you had quit. And I actually thought you were doing pretty well. You seemed reasonable. I didn't really see much of a change when you started smoking again. He didn't seem extra crunchy at all.
Or you mean I didn't seem extra crunchy not smoking?
Exactly. Yeah, you didn't seem extra crunchy not smoking.
Well, it was just the sleeping dragon. You probably awakened it. I probably bummed my first relapse cigarette off you, huh?
Maybe. I was doing home rolled back then, so maybe I rolled you a couple. I don't really remember. It was sort of a haze of throwing guns and weed together and working on the movie all day, every day.
It was awesome.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
So, a couple follow-ups on what we previously had last episode. We were talking about Brave New World. We talked about the theoretical bet that
George Orwell and Aldous Huxley had.
No. It was Scientology guy. No, those guys were friends and talked about their books. No, it was L. Ron Hubbard and
Robert Heinlein.
Robert Heinlein. They had a bet of who could start their own religion. And our friend John says it's absolutely true. He knows an old Navy friend of both of theirs. They're both in the Navy. And he knows an old Navy friend of theirs who's still alive and really old who says it absolutely happened. And Heinlein's contribution to it was just writing the book Stranger in a Strange Land. That was his religion, but it didn't really, he didn't try to make it into a religion. It was about a religion.
Right, right. What was L. Ron Hubbard's book, Dianetics?
Yeah. There's a movie I really like. It's Repo Man. Did you ever see Repo Man?
No.
I was actually friends with the girl, the main actress in it, Olivia Barish, when I lived in L.A. It's a really kind of funny post, kind of not too distant future or like present time. It involves aliens and radioactivity and punk rock. And there's actually a great scene in there that talks about government cheese, which I want to talk about at some point. It's where the Circle Jerks are like, they've sold out and they're playing lounge music. They're playing a version of their song When the Shit Hits the Fan. And our hero, who's played by Emilio Estevez, he plays a punk rock kid who becomes a repo man.
Okay.
He's watching the band and he goes, I used to like these guys. But there's a line in that song about government cheese. Do you know what government cheese is?
Isn't it cheese they used to give people on welfare? Or I guess you'd buy it with your food stamps?
No, they'd give it to you in addition to your food stamps.
Oh, wow.
I've had it. It's not very good, but it comes in these really gross blocks that are like 6 inches by 6 inches by like a foot and a half, and they weigh like 30 pounds, and it's like really generic American cheese.
Dude, how statist is that? I'm waiting for my government cheese ration. I'm so glad I've never been in that position.
Oh, and it came in these like generic boxes, like white cardboard with black government-type printing on them, like almost looked like stencil, that said government property, not for resale. So I'm thinking, like, even when it's in your kitchen or in your stomach,
it's government property.
It's government property.
They can come confiscated or put you in jail if you don't use the government property correctly.
Yep.
If you make a grilled cheese sandwich with hot sauce in it, they'll throw you in a cage.
Actually, you had to put hot sauce on it to even eat it, man. It was
just
so
gross.
Bland and gooey and cheesy. Like, not cheesy in a good way, but cheesy.
Yeah. Although Old Dirty Bastard once said he wanted to get that good government cheese.
What was I going
to
say about that movie? It's kind of a dystopian future. I think people dig it. But there's a running joke in it where every third character in it is trying to get everyone to read this book called Diuretics. And they're like, Diuretics, it changed my life, which is a takeoff on Dianetics and how like religious people are about that book or were when this movie was made in the 80s in L.A. But a diuretic is a drug that
makes you
either pee or not pee. I forget which.
No, it makes you have to piss.
Yep.
Yeah.
Diuretics changed my life. Did you ever read Stranger in a Strange Land?
No, I want to. I've read Moon is a Harsh Mistress, which I loved. One of my favorite books ever.
I had a really disorienting experience with Stranger in a Strange Land. It's about a guy from another world or dimension who comes to Earth and starts a polyamorous love religion and has like unlimited money because he has like future technology and there's like a big bowl of money by the exit of his commune. And he's got a bunch of wives, but he's taken to the Naval Hospital in Bethesda, Maryland. I actually read that in a branch of that hospital. I was doing paid drug research in the National Institute of Health, which is part of that complex. That complex is actually also where the vice president's house is, like the White House for the vice president. And remember, Cheney had it removed from Google.
From Google Maps or Google Earth?
Yeah, it was just like a big black space. His house was a big black space on there.
Well, that's a dead giveaway, isn't it?
Yeah. But he didn't want anyone seeing, like, what happens on his roof or something. But
Yeah. Sunbathing and masturbating while he's looking at pictures of dead brown people.
But I think that book actually really inspired this movie called The Man Who Fell to Earth that stars David Bowie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
David Bowie's, like, a surprisingly good actor. Usually singers who act suck, but he's really good. It's a great movie. It's about a man who, a humanoid looking guy, a guy looks human, looks like David Bowie, who comes to Earth and has alien technology and becomes the world's richest man, and then the government destroys him.
Mm, yep, which they would. Or yeah. Steal his technology and use it to increase the wealth of the state.
I think they did both, yeah. But it's a good movie.
And to bring it full circle, David Bowie's son was actually in a movie called Moon, which...
He's in that? That's David Bowie's son?
From my understanding...
Sam Rockwell is David Bowie's son? No way.
Maybe he's not a son. There was some connection there. I was just looking on IMDb. So you fact check this before you play it.
You talk and I'll... Talk about Moon, and I will talk about Assigning Moon and how great it is, and I'll look this up.
Yes, your new homework assignment is to watch a movie called Moon, made in 2009. Basically, the guy is a moon miner, so they send this helium-3 back to Earth, and it supposedly fixed the energy crisis, and so now we get all this cheap energy that's being shot down to us from the moon. And the guy, his name is Sam Bell, he's sort of a one-man band. It's him and a robot on this moon base. And then he realizes, and he's in his home stretch. He's got 3 weeks left to go. Supposedly he had a 3-year contract. So he's going home, and then insanity ensues, and it is a mind f- I don't want to get too much into it, because if I do, I'm going to ruin some extraordinary surprises for you. But it's one of those movies that really makes you rethink what it means to be human, which I think all good science fiction does. Very scary and thought-provoking. You know, I always say I never watch horror movies, you know, like slasher flicks, because they don't really do anything for me.
I like movies like this, like psychodrama, yes, kind of movies, where there's not a lot of blood, there's not a lot of actual, like, violence, but you're as creeped out as you would be in a slasher film.
Way infinitely more so for me. And there is some violence, but it's sanitized in a way that makes you think... That is more scary than I've ever experienced.
You know, there's a really creepy film that's got very little violence in it, like just snippets of it, is Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer. You ever seen it?
No, I haven't seen it.
It's based on a couple of actual serial killers that work together, and it's really scary. And it's like the scariest scene I've ever seen in a movie is two people sitting at a table talking in this movie. Where this guy is telling this woman, like, yeah, I killed my mother. No, I raped my mother. No, it's just like, he seems so normal and so like anybody's next door neighbor, you know, he doesn't seem like crazy serial killer guy. You can kind of get in his head, and it's the scariest thing I've ever seen in a movie. And it's two people sitting at a table talking.
Yeah.
This is actually a scene in Requiem for a Dream that's two people sitting at a table talking. It's the mother, played by Ellen Burstyn, and the son, played by God, he's in my movie. What's his name? The pretty boy that's got a rock band, you know, Seconds to Mars guy.
Yeah, Jared Leto. Jared Leto.
Yeah. Well, who was in a really cool sitcom that was really creepy back in the day. You know that one?
No, I don't. But I did find our fact check here. I was wrong. It's not Sam Rockwell.
The director is David Bowie's son.
Duncan Jones is David Bowie's son.
DJ's going to really dig that. I just emailed that to her at work while we're talking about it, because she loves David Bowie.
Did she?
And she loved that movie. The reason we got that movie was she was telling her coworker, one of the new lawyers working there, about, well, they were talking about movies, and, you know, he's a gamer and he's really into sci-fi and, like, futuristic stuff and stuff with weird plot twists in it, uh-huh, that, like, don't really, not the kind of stuff I like. And she was saying, well, my husband says that all the movies he likes have a common denominator, and this is my common denominator: pretty much every movie or book or story I love, and there's exceptions in animation, mm-hmm, that just goes out the window with all these rules, but mm-hmm, in movies with actors, every movie I love takes place somewhere between like 1920 and like 2050, like the not too distant past, the not too distant future. Mm-hmm. The movies I love all have small casts. They all take place on Earth, and they all involve no magic, you know,
right,
just like actual things that could physically happen.
Yeah.
And except for taking place on the moon, this story, Moon, fits all those criteria. And it kind of takes place in like an Earth-like laboratory on the moon. So it's not a stretch for me.
Yeah, yeah.
I loved it.
I did too. And I consider it as having one of the best literary moments I think I've ever experienced. I know it's in a movie, but I still consider it a literary moment. When you come to a sort of realization, again, I can't show my hand too much because it's your homework assignment to watch the movie. But for me, it was on par when I was reading 1984 and Winston realizes he's been being watched the whole time in the little shack he had rented with the girl he was boning. And the telescreen says, you are the dead. And it's just sort of that moment that makes your bowels sort of quiver. So I highly endorse it. It does, to me, have some implications for freedom and libpair in the sense of what kind of reality we as humans are entitled to or have. It sort of bends that whole thing in your mind. It's great.
Yep. You know how we could do spoilers is we could put them backwards and people would have to use software to play them forwards.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Software or...
I'll say something right now to you, and I'm just going to delete this out. Two things, which we'll talk about next week, I want to talk with you about. So,
yeah.
Haha, no one gets to hear this. So yeah, back to
the cast.
What we can talk about.
You
cast.
Missed it.
So yeah, watch Moon featuring Sam Rockwell, the new movie. There's several movies called Moon. It's the one from like a couple years ago. You know, Sam Rockwell, I loved his acting. He's actually in, I looked him up on IMDb. He's actually in the Selby movie, Last Exit to Brooklyn.
Oh, okay.
But I can't picture what character he is. I'll have to go watch it again. He's a character named Al, who I think is one of the murderous, tranny, pansexual, street thug, speed freaks that are headed by Stephen Baldwin's character.
I never saw it, but it sounds like a good movie. I'm going to have to go see it now.
It is. Stephen Baldwin is a raging neocon. You ever heard interviews with him?
Yeah, who was it? Hannity has him on sometimes because Hannity has this like beef with Alec Baldwin. It's so funny. It's like a rat beef. Like Hannity uses it to get ratings and to...
It's like we're both on the same side, but let's hate each other.
No. He's on the opposite side of Alec. You know, he hates on Alec for being a liberal. You know, Hannity does.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
It's a left-right beef is just a rap beef.
Yeah.
A beef for the press.
It really is, yeah. And it's like that episode of Boondocks where the Reverend played by CeeLo, who's supposed to be sort of like Al Sharpton or Jesse Jackson, he gets an ongoing beef with Ann Coulter. And then they meet in the green room and Huey's there.
And you find out that they're friends or lovers.
Yeah, they're in on it. Yeah, and Ann Coulter's like boyfriend is this black dude named like Tyrese or something. And she's all like speaking Ebonics. She's like, ooh, with these biscuits. These are some good biscuits. She's telling her black boyfriend to get a job, and she's just real ghetto, and it's hilarious. It's pro wrestling. We've used that analogy before. That's all it is.
Yeah. So let's talk about sopa. It sounds like a delicious Mexican food, but it's not that.
I wish it were, but...
I accidentally called it last week the... It's the Suspension of Privacy Act or something, but it's the Stop Online Piracy Act. Which is something that's being considered in Congress right now. It's been put off until the new year, indefinitely detained, but probably not for long. It's a really horrible thing. It's ostensibly set up to be able to shut down sites that are dealing in pirated music, movies, and fake handbags. But it really would allow a lot more than that. It could basically allow the Department of Justice to just turn off any website they want.
Yes, definitely. What do you think, Michael? You think they'll be able to pass this thing?
I don't know. There's actually been some things that made me feel kind of hopeful was that the hacker group Anonymous issued a sort of threat to Sony of we will shut down your enterprise, you know, which would sound like an empty threat coming from a bunch of kids from most people, but Anonymous have infiltrated the Pentagon and Sony before. And, you know, basically they put out this video on YouTube threatening it. And a couple days later, Sony quietly withdrew their support
right.
for it.
Yeah, I like where it's coming from. But how is f***ing with Sony going to prevent the government from doing this?
Well, you've actually been personally harmed by them or some hackers' actions. Talk about that.
Well, yeah. I mean, when they shut down Sony the first time, or whatever that was, I don't know if that was Anonymous or not, but, you know, sometimes they get conflated in my head. But around the same time Anonymous was f***ing with Sony, you know, I wasn't able to use it to view Hulu or to do a lot of the things on my PS3 for like a month. And you know, when you hurt somebody like Sony, or if you say, I'm going to hack Sony, what you're really doing is you're pissing off a bunch of gamers and a bunch of people who use their PlayStations.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like Occupy Wall Street shutting down the ports in Oakland. You know, you're just screwing the people that are on your side or you want on your side. And it's hard to really say who or what Anonymous is because anybody can work under that banner. So it's not like they have a centralized leadership, which is part of their advantage because they can't be shut down. Right. But, you know, a lot of their stuff seems to be with trying to improve government.
Right.
You know, like make the voting process in various countries more honest.
Right, right. Which is really sad because a lot of...
It's a half measure.
It is. It's more... Well, it's going in the wrong direction. The direction shouldn't be to make government better. The direction should be to keep us from needing a government in society.
I think instead of, like, shutting down the government computers... Be able to just avoid anything they can try to do to you.
Right.
You know, make a worldwide virtual tunnel that the governments can't get into.
Yes, yes. That is, in the end, I think the ultimate solution is to be able to build up a network or build up the network, the internet or whatever you have, your interpersonal network, to where you don't need to be involved in the state.
You know, and again, the model I go back to is Discord Records, the punk rock label in the 80s that's still together, still around, you know, in Washington, D.C. Their thing wasn't, we hate the major labels. They're horrible. It's like, we're going to create a complete alternative to the major labels that people won't need to even think about the major labels. And they've done it.
Yep.
I mean, there are people that buy everything that comes out on Discord, and a lot of their record collection is Discord stuff.
Right, right.
And there are people that will, like, download it and buy it anyway because they love that company so much and the bands on it.
Right, and that's all you need. And that's why this, it's another point with this Stop Online Piracy Act thing is, you know, people think that in order to be successful as an artist or as a purveyor of something like movies or music, you need to have some sort of government protecting your intellectual property so people don't steal it and defraud you. But really, people aren't that dumb. If they like your work, they're going to donate. They're going to find some way to support you.
Another thing that Anonymous is doing or talking about doing on Reddit that I really like is, and it's kind of a half measure, but it's kind of cool too, is trying to find dirt on politicians that want to vote for this. And I really like the tack they're taking. They were like, well, here's a list of horrible Republicans. And someone else is like, no, we need to find one person from each party.
More than that, you need to find every person in every party.
Yeah, but they wanted to really concentrate on like two people to be scapegoats to scare everyone else to basically say, you are not never going to get elected again. We're going to find, you know, we're going to have money bombs for your opponents. And then there were like intelligent conversations about that too. Like, well, let's make sure their opponents aren't far worse than them on everything.
That's a good point. The other point is, I mean, the way Congress works is the party leadership in each party goes behind the doors and they figure out who can afford, you know, who's in election year right now, who can afford to vote for something unpopular. And they come up with a way that they can vote. And then the people whose ass is on the line can maybe vote against it, even though they don't really feel that way.
Yeah. And it's such a game. I mean, Obama even tried to do that with signing this indefinite detention. He added a signing statement saying, I don't like this, but I'm going to sign it.
Right.
And then he issued this thing saying, I promise my administration will never use this to detain an American citizen without a trial. And I'm thinking,
bullshit.
A, no, you'll just drone him. B, you don't have a good track record of keeping your promise. Uh-huh. And C, what about the next administration?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, someone on Reddit said, this is like bringing a loaded gun to a party but promising not to use it. And I'm like,
no,
that's a bad analogy. I bring a loaded gun to every party and wouldn't use it unless someone tried to kill me.
Right.
A better analogy would be, it's like someone planting a bomb under your car seat, having a remote trigger for it, and saying, I promise not to use this, but I'm going to hand it to the next guy on my way out the door.
Right.
You know, because it works like that. Yeah. I mean, a lot of what Obama's doing, he's building on the shoulders of Bush. Mm-hmm.
They all just build on each other. And that's why the system is just nothing but log rolling. And yeah, Republicans were fine when Bush was using all these powers because they trusted him for some unknown reason. And then when Obama gets in power, they call him a dictator. They say it's ridiculous that he has czars and all this other nonsense. But it's the same government.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFiends.com.
So a couple of casts ago, we were talking about Barry Goldwater and the ad that caused people to not vote for him, where it was the little girl playing with the daisies, and then she sees the mushroom cloud in her eyes. And we talked about how much the world has changed, to whereas now things are seen in a completely different light when it comes to nuclear weapons in America using them. Butler Schaefer actually picked up on this too and had a very interesting post in Lou Rockwell's. Really short, so I'm just going to read it. Basically the same sentiment we had, but I guess maybe great minds think alike. He says, isn't it interesting that in 1964, Barry Goldwater was considered dangerous because of the fear that he might use nuclear weapons against North Vietnam? Now, Ron Paul is considered dangerous because he would refuse to use nuclear weapons or any other military force against Iran.
Yeah, it's we're living in a bizarre world, man.
It's a total bizarre world, and I'm so glad that there's so many people out there that see that. Whereas, you know, in the past, maybe that wasn't the case. Or the people who saw it, there was so much horizontal enforcement, and there wasn't something like the internet to cut through the noise. So you might just feel like you're isolated in being rational, which can make you think like you're crazy. I mean, if everybody else says something that seems crazy to you, it doesn't make you feel very mentally healthy.
I know. Several people have told me lately that Freedom Fiends makes them feel better in a world that worries them. They feel like they're not alone. Like people that live in places that aren't big cities that have anarcho-capitalist dinner groups where you can go talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good point. And I'm glad if people are saying that. I think that's one of our goals. We're a community.
My whole take on everything is like I learned a lot from AA, and that's a lot of what I do is AA kind of methodology applied to freedom. Mm-hmm. And that was the thing in AA was like a big part of why AA works is because you don't feel alone in this thing you're trying to face, you know?
Right, right.
And AA used to have this service before there were groups in every city. They used to have this service where they actually, like, the central office had people that would volunteer to answer snail mail letters and help keep people sober in remote places. Ah. And now they do it by the internet.
Right, so. So back then it was like a pen pal kind of thing, and now it's probably online chat.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, the image I'm using for this podcast is this picture I found. It's a takeoff on the Shepherd Fairey Obama Hope poster.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, "Hope I don't get indefinitely detained."
Yes. That was a good meme. A very good meme. I have a friend who's sort of leftish, and he posted that on his Facebook, and I was very proud of him for that.
Well, I do think that Obama is just so steamrolling and barrel forward with his tyranny that some of the left, the smarter parts of the left, are waking up and going, "Where is our hope, president, and what have you done with him? You know, you're just like Bush."
Yeah.
Or worse.
Yeah. Unfortunately, some of them also drink the Kool-Aid that Ron Paul's a mean old racist and he doesn't like black people. And
I like how you snorted. He's a mean old racist. Accidental, but funny.
They're the piggies in Animal Farm. Some pigs are more equal than others.
Yeah. You know, my thing is like really like the left are mostly a bunch of pussies. Like I wanted to be more like the left in the 60s, man. I wanted to be like marching in the streets every day, not complaining about something. Wall Street's a good target, but it's like I said, it's blaming the shadow, not the monster. You know?
Yes.
The Fed and the government, the Federal Reserve and the government is the monster they should be occupying. But where is the anti-war protest that we had even during Bush?
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Obama is killing more brown people per week and risking the lives and being responsible for the deaths of more Americans each week than Bush was.
Not only that, but I was listening to anti-war radio, and they were talking about an article basically stating that Obama has built up – his whole apparatus is around the drones, and the CIA has basically now become, you know, drone central. It's this organization whose main goal is to find out who we need to kill with the drones and how do we get the drones to kill them.
Well, the military is going to get like that too. I mean, it's always – soldiers have always been a weak point in the military. Mm. They are man. They are flesh and blood.
Right.
Robots can fight a lot better. And the Air Force is training more drone pilots than airplane pilots right now. But I don't think they're going to get rid of the soldiers. I think they're just going to deploy them back home to keep people down. You know, the military is becoming the cops, and the cops are becoming the military, which actually violates posse comitatus, but that's another thing that's out the window. I was watching Statist Unit Victim Squad stories the other day. And I had to freeze frame on this thing. They were in this other cop station, and there was this poster on the wall, and I had to stop it and look at it. And it's a cop and a U.S. soldier, like, staring proudly into the camera with their guns at the ready in full battle uniform. and it said, support our troops at home and abroad. And I'm like, cops or troops? Really? They're just admitting it now?
Well, that's how they think of themselves. I mean, think about SWAT teams. You know, before 9/11, there was SWAT teams in most major cities. Now every little podunk town has its own SWAT team. They all got Homeland Security grants to buy armored cars. My town I live in has one.
They have to be ready for the killdozer.
Right. These are basically military vehicles, these armored cars that Homeland Security is passing out like candy to all the local police departments. I got to see one up close firsthand and, you know, take pretty pictures of it and put it on the news and say, look at this great new tool for crime fighting. And it's got like inch thick steel. They say it's rated to withstand a 50 caliber gun hit. It's got turrets on it, night vision. It can be air sealed so that they don't need to breathe any air. You know, it's got its own internal, like a submarine. It's got its own air. Crazy stuff.
I remember this article in Guns Magazine, which I think is still published. It's, I think David Kadria might write for it. I forget, but it's a, you know, it's probably just a website now, but it was a magazine for 50 years or something. And I remember seeing some scanned back issues, and I was looking at this back issue from 1968, and there was an article about a police force being the first police force in the country being issued AR-15s or full auto, you know, M4,
Isn't it M4? I think it's M4.
I don't know. I mean, someone took me to task for my lack of knowledge on M1 Garands and M14s recently because I didn't know the difference in looking at one. And it's like, I know the guns I own. You know?
I don't know the government guns. Maybe
I don't own any government guns, so I don't know them. You know, if you want to sit around and just read things and quote statistics, that's fine. I'll be at the range. But anyway, it was this picture. And it was, I think it was in Washington State. It was some rural town. It was like little town. And it was like guys in old-fashioned cop uniforms. It looked really ancient. And they were holding AR-15s, like five of them proudly. Like, we're the first police agency in the country to be issued military-grade rifles. 1968, I think it was, or 69. I'm like, that's when that started. You know, in the 60s when they thought the kids were going to get out of control protesting Vietnam.
Yeah, yeah.
And they shot some unarmed kids in Kent State University.
Right, right. They did, yeah.
The National Guard did.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the police become the military become the police. Back to Occupy Wall Street. I heard a really good take on the ineffectiveness of it from Stefan Molyneux recently.
Okay. What's his take?
He was basically saying the same thing we say. It's like, you know, it's a good idea. I can't blame you for wanting to protest it. It's tyrannical. But since it started, 2,500 citizens have been arrested. No bankers have suffered in any way. No Wall Street executives have been arrested. They're protesting things like ATM fees.
And not paying back my college loans.
Well, yeah. And it's like, what happens specifically with Wall Street and the banks with that is they protested enough to get Congress involved. And then Congress says, oh, you can't have this late fee. And then the banks jack up whatever prices they can and deflate the dollar, and you lose money anyway. The real solution isn't adding more laws. It's getting rid of the laws to the point where there's real competition. And I heard Bernie Sanders on Colbert last night. It was really offensive.
Huh.
You know who he is?
Yeah, he's either a senator or congressman from Vermont. An avowed socialist, but sometimes intersects with Ron Paul on some issues like war and secession.
Yeah. Yeah, there's three Democrats that agree with Ron Paul on a lot of stuff. It's him,
Kucinich, and Dennis Kucinich. Grayson, but Grayson isn't a congressman anymore. He's trying to get
Barney Frank.
And Barney Frank, right, right.
Yeah, Barney Frank wants to end the Fed and end the wars, but he wants to add a million other laws too.
Yeah, yeah, and he's a big fan of Obamacare.
But yeah, so is Saunders. Saunders, you know, wants to like really more heavily regulate the financial industry and really heavily tax everybody who's rich. And, you know, instead of just doing away with all that and letting the free market take care of it more. And he's the only U.S., you know, member of Congress who is admittedly a socialist. I mean, a lot of them lean that way, but he's like, yeah, I'm a socialist.
Right. At least he's honest about it. You got to give him that, because even Newt Gingrich and Mitt Romney are socialists, but they would never, ever use that word to describe themselves.
Yeah, and they'd use it on their enemies.
Right.
But Saunders recently published a book that is a transcript of an 8.5-hour filibuster he did against deregulating banks. you know, boy, that sounds like the feel-good hit of the year. I want to read that for entertainment.
Well, see, it's one of these things where they change the meaning of the word, deregulating the banks. It is a bad thing, you know, the way they quote-unquote try to deregulate the banks, because the only way to really fix the problem is to unregulate the market. But when they do something called deregulate the banks, what they do is they get together with the lobbyists of the banks and they figure out what works for both of them, and they just change the regulations slightly. They always end up favoring the banks and favoring the powered interests. What we need to do is get rid of the banking cartel. I mean, that's why banks are horrible, because they're basically a government-granted cartel through the Federal Reserve and through fractional reserve banking. If those things couldn't exist in a free market, they can't exist without the government guns to enforce them and ensure them.
Yeah. You know, there's a letter right now that was delivered to Obama a week or two ago complaining about something he did. I don't remember which unconstitutional tyranny it was, but
there's so many, too many to count.
Oh, it was demanding that he fire Eric Holder. It was over that Fast and Furious.
Right.
But it was signed by a bunch of Republicans and like two Democrats. I'd really like someone to cross categorize and find out how many of the Republicans who signed that also signed the extension of the Patriot Act and the indefinite detention.
Yeah, the NDAA. Yep, yep. Good point, good point. And
hypocrites.
You know, as far as firing Eric Holder.
And replacing him with what? Someone worse, probably.
Exactly, that's the point. We don't need to fire Eric Holder. We need to get rid of the Department of Justice.
And that's one of Ron Paul's. I mean, he doesn't really make campaign promises. He doesn't do that. But he says, you know, what he'd be in favor of and what he'd like to do. First of all, because sometimes the president can't do what he promises because he overpromises. Like,
he's promised to get the troops out of all the foreign bases. That's one
there you go.
Big campaign promise.
One of his agendas is to end the ATF.
Right. Yeah. And he's got five government agencies he wants to cut. He wants to cut $1 trillion from the budget. And one of the good points I think Ron Paul always brings up is he brings this up in The Revolution too. He basically says, you know, if we cut government spending by even half, we would only go back in time 10 years. Do you think the government was small 10 years ago?
I know.
If you do, you've got problems, because it wasn't.
The government wasn't small 40 years ago when I was a kid and Nixon was sending Americans against their will to go shoot at people in Vietnam and coining the phrase war on drugs and ramping up money for it.
Right. Basically, if you have a government, your government is too big. That's the way it works.
Although I'm all in flavor of finishing each other's sandwiches. I'm all in favor of incrementalism and scaling down.
I waffle back and forth.
Yeah, I know. Me too.
I mean, it depends on where the increments come from. I mean, if you're talking in increments of we can rightfully expect, you know, all of the younger people to not believe in a state and to withdraw their consent, you know, that's an incrementalism I can believe in and I can handle.
Well, I really like how it happens in Mulan Labe, which is total fiction, but it's like the new governor comes in, he's a libertarian, he immediately slashes a bunch of stuff from the state budget, and then passes a bunch of laws that undo a bunch of bad laws. And it gets to the point where like 3/4 of the state reps are replaced by libertarians or people that are agreeing with him and voting with him. And there's a comment I really like in there of, you know, the remaining quarter of them are 27 neocon Republicans and 2 Democrats, and they're running for re-election, and like nobody's even paying attention to them. And Boston says, you know, after people seeing how this works and how all their lives get better, what platform can these people run on? Higher taxes and less freedom?
Right, right. Which is, of course, my opening line from a speech I have that's on YouTube, where I was supposed to debate a minarchist and me taking the side of anarchism. And that was my first line, is my opponent is taking the side of more taxes and less freedom. Because anytime you have a government, that's what you're going to have. You're going to have more taxes and less freedom, because any tax is bigger than zero.
Yeah, someone actually commented about that in an email to me or on the website recently. They really liked that video.
Yeah, in fact, Shepard Humphreys, who's a friend of ours and a friend of Liberty and a friend of the cast, recently gave me a quote that somebody had put on the YouTube page that was also praising, I guess, the ideas in that speech. I say the ideas because, you know, that's what we're really pushing for here, is we don't want to aggrandize ourselves. What we want to make bigger, what we want to push, is the idea of liberty. The idea that people can't tell you what to do. You tell yourself what to do. And it's a fiction.
I like going along for the ride, though.
Exactly, exactly.
Good thing that you mentioned Shepard Humphreys, too, because now people will understand why when I was talking about that Obama humping propagandist Shepard Fairey, I said, Shepard Humph, I'm sorry, Shepard Fairey.
Right, the bad Shepard, not the good Shepard.
The good Shepherd. Shepherd Humphreys is the good Shepherd.
He is, indeed.
Yes.
Shouts out to Shepherd. I guess we already kind of did that.
Another thing I want to cover before we run out of time in a few minutes here is a list of workarounds for if the government seizes the internet.
Yep. News you can use.
And I'm going to link these on the website. And this is from the last time the government tried this crap. It's an article called 8 Technical Methods That Make the Protect IP Act Useless, which was the previous act that failed where they tried to do this. And there's a lot of good stuff in there. Some of it works some of the time. Some of it doesn't work some of the time. One thing is that if they just seize the domain registries of sites, the IP address will often still work with sites that have dedicated IPs.
Right.
We don't have one because it costs a lot of money. But, you know, with big sites, you can usually access them. And what I would do is there's a few different lists, just text lists of the IP addresses of a lot of good sites, and try them. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't, but you just enter. You don't even have to put http://, usually. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you just cut and paste the IP address into the browser and hit enter, and it'll go to the site.
Okay.
And another thing is, people should download now, before it's impossible, the Tor browser bundle, and I'll link that. I tested it out. It's really good. You can't do a lot with it other than just surf the web without installing plugins, and installing plugins could compromise your IP address being seen, but you could still search. I mean, it could be used to anonymize you, which is good if you need to send an email that you don't want to know people know it's from, or post on a forum or something anonymously. But if you didn't care about your IP address being seen and you just wanted to be able to surf the whole internet, if things were blocked, this would work with the plugins.
Tor would work? It would get you past
that?
Okay.
Yeah, but you should watch the video on the site, too, that talks about that in detail.
Okay. So, yes, all is not lost, even if SOPA passes. I think that's important to point out.
And, you know, another thing about SOPA is it would cripple free speech, it would cripple business and the economy, but it would not stop piracy.
Right. It's like saying the drug war would stop people using drugs. It's not going
to
happen.
It could make it so you can't go to Google or Facebook or Amazon or sites that, you know, drive the economy. But Pirate Bay is going to always find a way for you to get to
them. Well, you know what? Somebody on the Freedom Fiends Fun Forum had a really great quote on his take on SOPA. He basically said, you know, it's my hard drive. Nobody has a right to tell me what order my ones and zeros can be in.
I know. I think that was Justin.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Justin hung out with me this week. He was driving through town in his commercial trucking job, and he came by from like 2 in the morning till 4 in the morning. It was really fun.
Sweet.
I've been talking to him for like 5 years online, and I really like him, and I never met him in person.
Did you show him all your guns? Did you give him the gun tour?
Yeah, he was unimpressed.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, well, he's a gun guy.
Right.
But
I was impressed. I'd never been in a place with more than one gun that I could recall.
And I know. It was kind of part of our like theater to seduce you into...
Yes.
To, you know, I knew there was something special about you when I saw your I Own Me video. No homo. I knew I wanted to be in your life in some capacity making art. I didn't know it would ever go to this extent or this long, but, you know, I wanted to make a couple videos with you.
Yeah. I wanted to do music with you and collaborate. I think that was the first comment you said is, yeah, hey, if you ever need some guitar on a track, just let me know.
You know, the original thing, I don't know if I talked to you about this or just thought it, but the original thing I wanted to do, we actually never did, which kind of reminds me of, I learned to play guitar because I wanted to be able to play the song Hotel California, and I'd never learned it until like 5 years ago, and I've been playing guitar since
the 70s.
But the thing I wanted to do with you is I wanted to go film a music video with you with guns at Hell's Half Acre,
which is where they shot Starship Troopers at.
Yeah, which is based on a Heinlein book, but I don't think Heinlein's probably not rolling in his grave about it.
Yeah, he didn't co-sign it.
DJ's seen it and read the book, and she said it doesn't really have much to do with the book. It's kind of the name and the planet and a couple people, but that's about it.
Mm-hmm. And the evil monster at the end is a big vagina.
Yeah, so Eric Holder called Fast and Furious Führer a false flag. That's my alliteration. And blames white people.
He would. How does he blame white people? What does he say?
He says that all the criticism of him and Obama is racism.
Oh, of course. Playing the race card. Yeah, yeah.
That's so square, so tired, so wrong, so not true.
It really is. I mean, I don't know. To me, race is at a point where it's irrelevant, I guess. I mean...
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I swear, and I say this over and over, you are the most post-racial person ever. Because one time I was talking to you, and you were like, man, I'm really getting sick of Bush and all this crap he's doing. And I'm like, Bush? What? He just wrote a book. What are you talking about? And you're like, oh, I'm sorry, Obama. I get them mixed up. They're so similar.
In my head, they are.
It was totally unscripted, and it was real, and it was like the most post-racial thing I've ever heard, and I wish more people were like that.
Well, you know, I don't know if I can take credit for that necessarily mentally, or it was some big epiphany from me. To me, it's just always been, you know, I've always been sort of mixed race, you know, white and Iranian. And Iranian is so much of an other that I never had.
Well, it's so much of an other that if you're pure Iranian and you're an American citizen with a driver's license, doesn't your license say white?
Yeah, your license says white. Yeah, yeah. But of course, nobody, you know, people always thought of me as the other. They never thought of me as a white kid. Some people did. You know, black people would call me white boy, but white people would never accept me into their arms. You know, they'd say things like, you're really dark, you know, in the summertime, and people would be like, yeah, it's because he's from the Middle East or something, or he's a sand nigger.
So did you see that a federal judge has ruled that Iran was behind the 9/11 attacks?
Yeah, I wonder who put him up to it. I didn't read the quote-unquote evidence they had, but
I think they're gearing up for a war, man. I mean, hasn't Santorum said his first act as president would be bombing Iran or something?
I don't know if he said that, but yeah, they're definitely gearing up for war. Of course, they've been gearing up for this war since at least...
The 60s.
A long time. Right.
The 60s.
Well, why do you say the 60s?
No, I mean, well, because didn't we install the Shah or whoever...
Right, we did. In the 50s. In the 70s. Yeah, there was a democratically elected leader of Iran, Mossadegh, who ousted the Shah. And then the CIA reinstalled the Shah and ousted Mossadegh. And that eventually led to the revolution. So I would say since 79, we've been... plotting some way of getting Iran.
And your dad left in 78. Smart guy.
A little bit before that, I think. But he remembers the grumblings of the revolution.
Yeah. Too bad there's nowhere you can go from here now. I mean, I still hear this bullshit of people saying, if Obama keeps doing this stuff, I'm going to get my passport renewed. First of all, you should have your passport renewed now if you want to leave, because it's not going to be possible when the shit hits the fan. Yeah. Second of all, there's nowhere you can really go. I mean, liberty people saying, I'm going to leave this tyranny is just as specious as flag waver, flag humper saying, love it or leave it. You know, yeah. There's nowhere you can go.
No. I mean, unless you... If you have a lot of money, then yeah, maybe you could go live in Argentina with Doug Casey or...
Where I want to go is like just have my house removed from Google Maps and from the drone software.
Nestlandia.
Know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's another point is wherever you go, the government could send a bomb to you in less than an hour. They've got that technology now. So
not just a government, but this government.
Right, right.
Yeah.
There's no escape.
Liberty Now is dancing on New Year's Eve in the streets in the eye of a sniper scope, and Liberty Now is living in a world where there's a blanket of drones flying over every few hundred miles of the earth at any given time.
Well, real liberty is in your mind. Real liberty is realizing that...
I'm saying that's what, you know, everyone is like, USA, USA, vote for the guy who's going to be tough on brown people.
Right.
I saw some really heinous comments on an article on CNN on commie nanny news about the Strait of Hormuz.
Right.
You know, it was basically like a bunch of, USA fuck yeah types going, yeah, bomb them back to the Stone Age. And one guy was like, you know, basically saying they have a right to exist. Leave them alone. This is just because we keep poking him and trying to box him in. And, you know, don't blame the people. It's not the people. It's the people in charge there.
It's the government.
People. And there was a reply that said, and that's, you know, basically the guy was saying stuff we say. And one of the replies said, you don't get to talk in this conversation. The First Amendment doesn't protect people who commit treason, and you're committing treason with those words.
Ugh. People are just – some people just have it completely backwards. And
you don't get to talk and, you know, the amendment gives you the right, that's bullshit. All right. We're at the end of our rap here, man.
Any good news, Michael?
Yeah, teen smoking of cigarettes is at historic lows, but marijuana use is high.
Good, good, good.
I don't know it's if that's high, a freedom man. Fix, but it's not what they want, what the man
They'll
wants.
They'll never get what they want. I'm an optimist. I believe in the end, freedom wins. And so that's my 2 cents at the end of the cast. Now I'm going to go play Rock Band.
Worms. Hey, this is Michael. I'm editing this about 12 hours later, 4 in the morning. I just want to add, this thing came out after we were done and after Nemo went to sleep that y'all should go read for homework or fun for next week, because we're going to talk about it. It's an article in Accuracy in Media, which is an incredibly popular neocon site. It's one of Glenn Beck's favorite sites. There is a hit piece on there called Drugs, Guns, and Madness in the Ron Paul Revolution that bashes our Guns and Weed movie, bashes Pete Eyre, bashes Adam Kokesh, bashes Free State Project, pretty much everyone we know and like. It's really, really funny. And I'm kind of honored. I never thought that of all the things that people are rolling out to try to discredit Ron Paul with, that Nemo and I's film would be one of the things. Check it out. It's the last link on the blog post for this episode on freedomfiends.com. All right.
Rolling.
Welcome to the Freedom Smiths Freedom Hour with...
The Freedom Smiths.
Okay, let's try that again.
Hello, Freedom Fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I-O-E and that include endorphins. No one won't ask permission and I won't say please. Freedom fans, one fact that I gotta make clear.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Every week, we'll have an exciting new episode where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi weave their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com, the Micro Effect Radio Network at themicroeffect.com, and the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them.